SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From the event center at Bally's, from the event center at Bally's in Las Vegas at the races. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website as well, stevevick.com. Great to be here. A whole new environment that is completely different from what we've been used to. And I don't even know. I guess we'll wait till we hear from some of the guys that played at Bally's years ago. And we'll see, where they had camped out for the contest years ago. But I can't imagine it was in this rather enormous ballroom. And everybody that's going to play is going to be in this room. And there's room for not just the players, but some friends and families, some fellow travelers. And it should be great. A elevated stage in the middle of the room. The screens will each have four race quadrants up on them. And everything's in place. A lot of opportunity around the room for guys to punch their own tickets. And then... there's also tellers and live money tellers, and there's going to be a lot more done here today in advance of tomorrow's first chance, last chance, and the opportunity for, who knows, as many as eight. Depends on how many players they end up adding, and they're estimating about 400 players tomorrow to get things rolling. And for those that haven't had a chance to look at their email from last night, the mandatories tomorrow, they're going to play obviously a fairly limited slate of tracks available: Aqueduct, Fairgrounds, Gulfstream, and Oaklawn. And there'll be seven mandatories tomorrow. First contest race starts at 1 o'clock Eastern, 10 Pacific from Gulfstream, and the last will be the ninth from Oaklawn. In fact, I talked to Hammer about a half hour ago, and Hammer was trying to plan ahead and make sure that when they draw the Saturday card, they're able to place some races that will really fit nicely into the players' plans. So we're just going to start to wade into that, and we're going to talk to an early visitor to the ballroom in a minute. Chris Couples is going to join us from Hazel, Kentucky, and it's his first NHC, so it's all going to be new to him, and he's excited. He's got double qualified too, so he's got two tickets to play, and we'll talk to Chris. Sid Fernando, of course, hour two, we'll talk to Sid about the weekend winners, the three horses that took the next step. 'Tis the Law, 1,000 Words, familiar names from the weekend and going into them. And then Max Player, who is a new face. And I'll try Linda Rice again. Linda had an appointment off the racetrack yesterday that had her leave, so I didn't get a chance to wasn't going to be able to talk to Linda yesterday. So maybe we'll get Linda in this morning as well to talk about Max Player. So we'll do some pedigree, particularly some horses that performed well. Royal Act, for instance, we talked yesterday after the show. Peter Urton, and Peter's thrilled with Royal Act's performance, and feels like he's another horse that's going to keep getting better as they as the races stretch from 8.5 to 9 furlongs. As it happens, Royal Act did not make the next round of the Kentucky Derby future wager. They released it yesterday. We'll certainly talk to Marty McGee on Friday and go through the wager. Opens on Friday, closes Sunday, and haven't really dug into it other than to notice some of the names that are going to be new, and that includes Max Player. Violent City made this. It's going to be one of the longer morning line odds. Violent City, 50-1. But the names that we just kind of touched on, including Tis the Law, who of the individual betting interest, Tis the Law, 8-1. 15-1 on 1,000 Words, 12-1 Nadal. That's an aggressive price, considering, you know, considering that he's a maiden winner. Yesterday you heard from Baffert. In fact, if you were listening to the replay, you just were listening to Baffert minutes ago. Maxfield, 15-1. He's getting back into the swing of things. 10-1 on Independence Hall, who we're going to see in the Sam B. Davis on Saturday. And of course, if he wins impressively, you'll drive that number down. And Dennis's Moment, 12-1. And Authentic, the other Baffert, 15-1. So those are the teens from 8-1 up to 15-1. And then bigger prices, a No Door, Pointing for the Risen Star, 30-1. Basin on here for Asmussen, 30-1. Chance It, who I'm going to assume is waiting for the Fountain of Youth, 30-1. Enforceable, 30-1 for Cassie. Exalted, 50-1. Gold Street, off the LeCompte win, 30-1. Governor Morris, as Todd Pletcher told you, he's gearing up. Honor AP, 30-1. And Honor AP getting back into the picture. And then down to Palm Springs. That's an interesting inclusion. Here's a maiden winner, 50-1, with the second star. Premier Star, 50-1. Silver State, 50-1. Storm the Court, 30-1. And people will get a chance to see him run before the pool closes in the San Vicente on Sunday. And you can guess that a good performance will drive his price down. 30-1 for Structor, who's going to get his chances on dirt. And finally, 1,000 Words. Three Technique below 1,000 Words, 50-1. And that number is going to get some attention. Three Technique, people will certainly bet off of the nice closing effort in the Smarty Jones. And 5-2 on the field. So there's your future wager list for Pool 2. Third hour today, we'll talk to 6th District State Senator Tommy Tomlinson, Bucks County State Senator in Pennsylvania, after Governor Wolf's budget proposal yesterday set off alarm bells as he threatened to raid the Racehorse Development Fund. The thing is, the fund is a trust. It's not a pool of money that is just being dipped into out of state coffers. It's not state money. It's money that was created in 2017 for a long-term planning for breeders, and the idea that the money would be there for a extended period. And there's already been a pushback against the governor's proposal, because these aren't tax dollars. It's money that comes out of the casino funds, and We'll find out from Senator Tomlinson what his thoughts are. But in just 2 years, there's a lot of evidence that the development fund program has been successful. I mean, you hear ads from the Pennsylvania breeding and racing interests, and it's a state where mare's bred is rising, and the Pennsylvania bred program has really grown quickly, and from a quality standpoint, the champions and graded stake winners, and there's been a big influx of stallions into the state, and that we only talk about thoroughbred interests for those that might not be aware, because we don't talk harness too often. But Pennsylvania is essentially the Kentucky of standardbreds. It's the epicenter of the standardbred breeding world. So I wanted to, I reached out for somebody that is directly involved in Harrisburg, that was involved in the creation of the trust of the development fund, and will explain how racing interest in the state, standardbred and thoroughbred, will defend what they, what they've created, and why, and what the results have been, including more than 20,000 jobs directly, jobs directly associated with racing and breeding in Pennsylvania, and more. So Senator Tomlinson as well, Seth Merrow, and then a couple of other surprise visits like Chris Couples, who's sitting here with me and listening to me drone on. Good morning. Good
morning, Steve. Pleasure.
You came in when?
I come in Sunday evening.
So were you in time for Super Bowl?
Well, I had it planned that way, and then flight got delayed. But I got here right before halftime, so I got to see the second half.
Which pretty much, not that the first half wasn't interesting, but certainly the last 10 minutes.
I know a lot of people are disappointed, the 10-10, but it was good football.
Yeah.
I know I went back and watched the first half on my phone, and I was like, well, it's good football, because I kept seeing Twitter blowing up, it was boring. Well,
yeah, it seemed the way San Francisco came out and looked like a lot of the San Francisco dialogue about their defense and so forth. And but then when the Chiefs came back and scored that go ahead touchdown, I thought, all right, I think it was just because the Chiefs that weren't lighting it up and weren't moving the ball and the way that we had seen, the previous few weeks, it didn't have that, that fast break style,
right,
football that I think we thought maybe we might get. But it was, it ultimately was satisfying. Did you have any action? You weren't able to get anything in?
I had a small bet here at the sports book I think it was the beginning of the fourth quarter, but nothing happened there.
Well, and in fact, we were talking before the show, and it you've really focused in on playing the horses, and I found that very interesting, that you were playing some daily fantasy sports and so forth. Talk about your interest in getting here and getting to the contest, because this will be your first NHC.
Well, I'll back up to the football. I played FanDuel and DraftKings, I guess it'd be 16 years, real heavy. Dabbled in the horses a little bit, but I placed in the top 10 of the millionaire in FanDuel in 2016, I think three times in 1 year, until it was turned into a job quickly. And then as I got into the horses, and I remember 17 and 18, when winter would get here, football season, I just quit playing the horses. and I'd focus back on football. But as things changed in that area, you got all these websites and magazines. So the stuff that I had an advantage on then, I didn't have anymore because all these people were giving it out, you know, for, you have a subscription or whatever. And then there's the radio show on Sirius, you know, it's 24 hours, fantasy sports.
Yeah.
Well, this is the first year, or 2019 is the first year I've completely quit everything. I don't do any sports betting. I don't do any daily fantasy at all. I've just primarily focused horses only, and got to the NHC the first serious year that I tried to qualify. It was a long year trying, though. I'll give you that.
You kind of toured, you know, you kept your eye on the tour points and yep. If that was an avenue, and talk about the two qualifications and what options you were utilizing, because you've kind of feel like you're a better cash player than you are what we're essentially doing here, which is the win place.
Yeah, absolutely. All year it just seemed like I was one or two spots out from getting a qualifying spot, which, you know, led to large amount of points. I stayed in the top 50, 60 in points all year, so I was kind of banking the top 100 not qualified getting in. And then the last two big contests at Santa Anita were live money. I think the $1,500 buy-ins, and I got a spot in both of them. So I feel like I'm a lot better at the live money, but you have to – when in Rome, you got to do
– Yeah. You got to dance this tune, and essentially, it's picking, you know, it's picking winners, and
right.
And trying to decide. I guess, you know, as we've talked about this for so long, just picking the winner that you could conceive at the best price, and have you thought about the strategy here in terms of, you know, picking a number and trying to work your way to the number? We hear that so often.
Not really. I've just kind of based it on my everyday game it's took a while to get to this point, and that I may handicap 20 races, which I have a very slow process, and watching replays, and there may be Saturday and Sundays where I go through 40 races and don't make a single wager.
Hmm.
You know, it's took a long time and a pricey education to get to that point where I can be that patient. And so I'm trying to stick to that, but like Friday, I hadn't found very much. Like your lower level claimers and stuff, I don't play a lot of those. So this, you know, it forces you into that role. And I found Saturday I look forward to a lot more, be a little better quality racing. The rain kind of got me a little. I'm a better turf handicapper than I am dirt.
Well, and on this topic then, because I'm immediately curious, and I'm sure people listening are, talk about the process and how you crafted your game. Because the interesting part of a lot of this is you come from equine, you come from
right.
racing, barrel racing, and quarter horsing, and you know you were around it. I'm curious why you weren't betting even earlier, going back years.
Well, growing up, always in horse racing, you know, we watched the Derby. That was about all we watched. And then I guess about 10 years ago, me and my business partner started working together, and his father had race horses, and we started dabbling in claimers. So then I kind of got my attention just part-time, but I really didn't do any wagering. And then it just slowly built up from there.
Hmm.
We started dabbling in the claimers, so I started watching replays mainly for that purpose, trying to find horses to claim. We picked out 90% of the horses we've owned, you know, me and him have picked out ourselves. So that's where I got to watching the replays, and then that led to the handicapping and my process. If I don't watch replays, I don't let myself bet. I know. And it took a long time to get to that.
That's amazing, actually. That's remarkable. Because you talked about the from the fantasy sports standpoint about making it a job. I mean, obviously, if you are determined to know what every horse in a race has, you know, has how they've performed, then you're really working at it.
Yeah, and that's I kind of look at it like this, and these guys that are going to be here this weekend have been doing this for decades, and they can pick up a form and pick a winner, just boom. Well, I'm not going to have that kind of knowledge, so I've got to try to outwork them until that's my only option.
From a trial and error standpoint, what was the the way in which you found and settled on race watching and utilizing that? What other considerations do you make when you open up a program?
I look at pace, of course, and the first thing I do is I'm going to try to figure out the pace of the race, obviously, and kind of position where everybody's at. After I watch the replay, I look at a lot of times, but obviously if you don't keep up with the tracks on a regular basis, you don't know what the times mean. So that takes a lot of, I try to watch replays every week, your main tracks, your main special weights, your higher optionals, and try to keep up on that. But I put a lot of focus on times. I know a lot of guys don't do that. You got to know when to rule out them times and when not to rule them out, I think. But the replays and the trips and how hard one's being rode, and something I really think I excel at is your right now this time of year where your three-year-olds are stretching out, because you can see that body language, you can see their stride, and just see how hard they're being pushed. I've done really well at that. Derby, and that's really probably what got me going into it, is the Derby. I did really good at the Derby for just about every year for the past 8 years.
What's your best? Who's your favorite Derby winner?
My favorite, I don't have a favorite Derby. My favorite horse to run was Looking at Lee. I was all over Looking at Lee. I know.
Looking at Lee.
When he was coming up the rail, I know my heart was jumping out of my chest.
How did you bet him?
What did I do? I had the Exacta that year. I had three horses in the Exacta, and I hit that, and then I had across the board on him pretty heavy.
How about that? Looking at Lee. It's so great. That's so great because not a winner, but it kind of speaks to how many different ways there are to win in the game, because it isn't necessarily finding the winner as much as identifying a horse that has a chance at a price and then betting it properly.
Right, and it took me a long time to learn the betting it properly part. That's been a long, long road to that education.
Since it's not a cash contest, explain how your ticket structure evolved and how you apply your bankroll.
I've been asked that question by friends before, and to me, the race tells me what I'm going to do. I can't sit here and say I'm an Exacta player, or I'm a trifecta player, or I'm a win player. And every race to me comes different and tells me what I'm going to do if I find anything at all. It seems like lately in the live money contest, I have found a lot of trifectas, so I've kind of been leaning that way. But there's no set way that I wager.
How about ticket structure, though? What if you see a prime opportunity? Is it a group of horses that you can conceive that there's only these three or four horses in a field of how does field size apply into it, and what defines a prime betting opportunity for you?
Larger fields, the turf races, I obviously look at harder. If I can find that one horse, Breeders' Cup, I didn't place in the betting challenge, but I think I was maybe in the 20th range, just out of the money. But the Uni race, I was strong. I've been strong on Uni all year, and I had, if I would have did what I originally was going to do before I kind of chickened out a little bit and backed off, I was going to have Uni over Got Stormy. And then I had two horses in third, and I was just going to do my whole bankroll that way. And I kind of wussed out a little, and I built that ticket. I just didn't put all my money there, and then I made some different structures around that. I went back and figured it up. If I would have just hit that, I would have been sitting second or third after that race.
Yes.
But not a lot of experience, lesson learned there. But back to your question, man, I'm looking for that key horse. Like, I thought Uni was far above and beyond anything this year. And I waited on that race. And when I find things like that, I've learned to attack it hard.
The trigger pulling is one of the things that I think people that are evolving as a player. That's one of the hardest things. And it's really a self-confidence. It's a self-confidence element and also a fear factor of, you know, reaching deeper to bet your strongest opinion. Yeah. And, you know, because one of the things you hear all the time from successful players and the high-profile players is bet your, you know, the most on your strongest opinion. And it's hard. It's hard, right, to, you know, to peel off, you know, that extra layer. I mean, to make the biggest bet you've ever made. That part of it is more of an inside thing.
Right. And a lot of that's what's pushing that is listening to guys come on your show and talk about it. Guys come on the Pete show and, you know, hearing them guys that have done this for years and they're very good at it saying, you know, when you get that opinion, you got to go.
Did you get a qualifier for BCBC or did you pony up cash?
I bought in.
You bought in.
Yeah.
Because that's a significant investment.
To me, I know the structure of the BCBC and the quality of racing, that's the best opportunity, especially for my game, because I try to stay away from your claimers and just for time purposes. You know, my process is so slow, I don't have time to look at all them. And being Breeders' Cup, you've just got stakes race after stakes. It's just a good opportunity.
And you're familiar with the horses. I mean,
right.
And you've seen, for the most part, you've seen almost all of their races.
Oh, yeah.
at least once.
And it's nice to have all that, you know, you've got all this replay information in there and trip notes already, and you're not looking at something fresh and much easier.
How often do you play?
This year I played every weekend. I rarely missed a weekend that I didn't play. You know, some weekends I just dabble, maybe look at the races they're using in the contest. A lot of it depends on how much time I have in the week to get a head start on it.
I want to make sure to for you to talk about your racing interests too, and you're racing up in Indiana.
Yeah,
who's training for you?
Randy Hafner. He's a quarter horse and thoroughbred trainer, good friend of ours, and he's had some really good quarter horses over the years, and then thoroughbreds. He's got I cannot remember the sire he's got up there, but the Indiana Brocram is good money.
Very much. You know? Yeah, very much so. And how often do you get up to Indiana Grand?
Unfortunately,
not
very
enough.
Yeah, maybe once or twice a year. I don't even know that I went 2019 at all, which we scaled back some. I think 2018 we started the season, I think we had 13 or 14 head, and right now we've only got three. Just horses aged, and just like the handicapping and the wagering, it took a little while to learn to be very picky about what you drop a tag for. You know, be patient and wait for one that you was excited about claiming and not one that you just, well, he's worth, you know, worth dropping a tag. You know, it took a long time to get to that point also.
Where did you made me think of something in terms of getting to the racetrack. Thank you, Keith. Keith Shamblin delivering a coffee, which we've been waiting for since 3 a.m. Did you play from home? Where'd you play BCBC?
From home, yeah.
You did play from home?
Yeah. I'm a lot more comfortable at home, the quiet. I played in a couple the smaller live money contests when I was at Keeneland, but nothing major. I'll get distracted.
It's hard. It's hard. And that's why I find it just ridiculous when we hear from, you know, people criticizing racetrack attendance. If people are playing from home, I think it was somebody at Blood Horse. It might have been a conversation I had with Evan Hammonds about producing a virtual attendance number. Take the handle from a day, and we know what the average per person handle is, and divide it, because when they say, oh, there were only 3,000 people at Belmont on Friday, No, actually, there were 46,000 people at Belmont on Friday. It's just the dumbest approach. I mean, there's plenty of things to criticize about the game. Attendance isn't one of them.
Right.
Considering that our biggest events and the boutique events are wildly successful and well attended, but the Monday through Friday, there's more people playing, from home, and have access to it than ever before.
Exactly.
So it's just crazy.
And it's every day. Until the guys that play daily, they play every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, one of the frustrations right now is, as you said, you can look at dozens of races on a day and find not find the betting opportunity that really is exciting. I mean, do you have enough self-control to bypass action bets?
Oh yes, absolutely.
You can sit and let the races run and. Yeah. Not feel a need to.
And it took me a while to get to that point. At first you're going to the track and you're like, oh, I got to bet something on every race. I'm home. And there's a lot of people in the industry don't want to hear somebody say don't do that. But
no.
I know you can do that if you want to, but it's going to be a long, hard road unless you're extremely lucky. One thing I think I look at, like fairgrounds drawing their cards so far out.
Yep.
Which it's easier said than done because, you got your horsemen, it's so much.
But they're used
involved.
To it. It works. Right. It's not holding anybody back.
Right. I know. To me, that is huge.
You like that. How far advanced will you look at? Start looking? Because it gives you time to do all the replays.
Right. Five or six day lead time is huge to me. Well, just like right now, it's Wednesday. And most guys are, I'm sure, not near as slow as I am, so it's not a big deal to them. To me, it is. I run out of time every weekend, and there's races that I don't look at that could be opportunity that I would put money in them pools. But there's no way I can handicap all. Well, right, what's day Wednesday? So besides fairgrounds, your main tracks, we don't have any Saturday entries. 10, 11 o'clock today, they'll start coming out. But, and again, I don't want to criticize it because it's hard. You're writing your book and trainers got it,
No, but they've everybody's adjusted. And I, personally, for the stakes cards.
Right,
it's delight. I mean, to get that far out in front.
Which you can look at your nominations and all, but
yeah, but it's not the same as knowing.
Not the same.
Not the same as knowing. And the same is true. With the way in which the Breeders' Cup and the Triple Crown days have adjusted, they've pushed back to Tuesdays and Mondays for draws, and it absolutely contributes to everybody's
I think it's
appreciation
huge.
And understanding. Yeah, absolutely. Circuit wise, how much of a challenge is that going to be to you, in terms of places that you may not watch on a regular basis, or that you'll be watching some replays that on an oval that you don't really see that often?
Golden Gate's about the only track that they're using that I don't play at all. I cannot recall making a wager at Golden Gate.
Neither could Michael Bacik, and until Bacik won the, the horse that he eventually adopted, actually too. I'm going to forget its name.
About the only poly I Woodbine. About the only time I even play a poly track until every once in a while Turfway, but not very often until. Now it's such a better product at Turfway. I wish I had more time to look at it.
They released January handle numbers yesterday, and the Turfway numbers were up close to 50%. And if ever there was just raw evidence that that the betting product and of course the product is horses follow money, and the people we've talked to that have left horses in Kentucky that normally would have gone wherever, Oaklawn, Fairgrounds, Tampa, Gulfstream, they left horses up at Keeneland and in the training centers and up to Turfway, and it just it's just obvious.
Oh yeah, I've not handicapping it, just looking at the names. I'll look at the results, and I'm, you know, knowing some of the horses and us racing at Turfway over the winter of the past several years, I can tell the quality there's way up.
And the field, you know, field size generally had still been good in when you would look at a Turfway card. The races, it was such a crazy, it just seemed like, you know, when you watched Turfway during the winter, it was such a, it seemed like it was just mayhem out there. I mean, yeah. with that kickback, with the big clouds of dust and the horses rallying from off the pace. And it was a certain brand of the racing at Turfway that, I mean, is going to get a complete overhaul when they're going to put in it's going to be
I think prior it was a lot of it was, you know, that was your only option. We had horses that were good turf horses. They'd run okay on the poly, and yeah. We'd send some dirt horses down there. They were just running to run.
Exactly. You know, and, to buy time until coming back around. And we do that at Aqueduct, you know, with the turf horses. You know,
right.
Get a couple of starts, and, you know, once in a while we've had, you know, we had a turf mare get, you know, kind of spring a surprise. Williams Lucky Gray, she won in February at you know, kind of, we're kind of dumbfounded.
Yeah, nice surprise.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I, you know, didn't really expect him. She was seemed like strictly a turf mare, but, you know, found the right field and the right circumstance. You know, there's really nothing like it. You said that it's been frustrating trying to get a family photo, a win photo together with everybody. That'll drive you crazy.
Yeah, it has over the last several years. Every time we make the trip, just bad luck. But.
The new harness track, and how much interest do you have? Any interest in the harness at all?
No, I've read just headlines about it. I hadn't really read into it at all, which I've never watched any harness racing other than just, you know, it be on the TV for background noise.
Well, it's because that you're in southwestern Kentucky. How close is that Oak Ridge that's opening?
Oh, it's, I think it's about 80 miles.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, I just briefly read a headline about it. I didn't.
And how far are you from Kentucky Downs?
About an hour and a half.
So that's
it's not too bad. It's just no good way to get there from my house, or it wouldn't take that long to get to Kentucky Downs. That's on my bucket list. I've not been yet.
You should definitely go up.
Yeah.
That's an easy trip. And we met at Oaklawn.
Yeah. I think it was 2018 Arkansas Derby.
2 years ago, yeah. There we go. And actually, because you can't be far from Memphis at all.
Oh, no. About, my wife could tell me, but I'm going to say it's about 2.5 hours, which my youngest is St. Jude patient. They make that drive to Memphis about once every 3 weeks, so she's got it down to a minute, I'm sure.
Do you slip a trip in to see the Greyhounds at all over at the
no,
Southland?
No, I have never done that either.
That's fun.
Yeah. Everybody says it's something to go to.
It's a tragedy what's happening with it. Because it's fun. And that's a beautiful, you know, that is a nice facility. So if it's 2.5, so it's basically, you know, 4 hours to Oaklawn?
4.5 probably.
Yeah.
Depends on how fast I'm driving.
There you go. Right. And you know, you mentioned your partner. What business? What do you?
We got a trucking company, do over the road flatbed stuff and logistics, third party logistics.
Sure.
And we've done that I've done it since I was 18, 19 year old, but I guess I've been doing it for myself for about 12 years now.
Nice. How many trucks?
We just run 10 of our own trucks, and then we've got some owner operators, and we scale back a lot. So the economy's just kind of on a. The stock market's way up, but I can see it in the trucking business is not near as good as it looks.
As somebody that was in and still has some, you know, some food interest and was a food broker and, you know, did a lot over the years with that's how you tell what's going on is how many.
Yeah. You can kind of get a feel of what the market's going to do. it'll give you a precursor to that. I just don't have the knowledge to know what to do with that information.
Well, but you know what to do with the information that you glean from the workouts and from how much workout video do you watch? If you're appreciating physical performance and you can see the way a horse is finishing and being ridden, a lot of the workout video stuff has got to be helpful.
Oh yeah. I try to watch any I can find and I have time. XBTV is a big help there. You can comb through the sales and find workout videos on the younger horses until the 2 and 3 year old. That's a must.
So, and you know, that was a hidden for many years. That was a truly hidden nugget. When it came to betting 2-year-olds.
Right.
And then that sort of somehow, I don't know who it was per se that let that cat out of the bag to go and start watching the training videos, the Breeze Show videos, to get a clue about the, you know, how a horse worked. You know, some of it actually came from the paddock. I think from the paddock interviews and the paddock observations and you would hear, I know Maggie has mentioned it, Maggie Wolfendale. And by the way, congratulations to Maggie and to Tom Worley, who had their second child the other day. I think it was, I've lost track of days, so I'm going to think it might have been Sunday or Monday. So congratulations to the Morleys. But I think maybe Maggie or maybe, you know, like maybe in the prattles with Andy would say, they started to say, went in 10 flat at Timonium and, you know, watched the video. And that sort of was a hint that, okay, there's a clue about, you know, watching. And granted, I mean, a horse that breezes in March, April, and May isn't necessarily the same horse in July, August, September, but it
gives you something.
It's something. Yeah, exactly. And the difference, one difference is that if you come from a background where you've put your hands on a horse and, you know, whether it's the show world and whether it's, barrel racing as you do and have done, you're retired now, right?
You've stopped.
You can tell just a lot more and than somebody like me. I mean, I've come to really appreciate the physical part, and feel so much more equipped than I did when I first started watching, you know, to get a clue about, you know, how a horse is moving and you know, how a horse looks and how a horse is built for the assignment, you know, the ones that are being asked to stretch out, but they, you know, they look short necked and they look like a sprinter.
They get short strided.
Yep.
Well, I hear guys talk about trip notes and they'll be telling me about a horse. Well, he was wide and he checked and re-rallied, but they don't tell me nothing about what the jockey was doing to get him to do these things. Well, Uni was a prime example. She said she was right off track records 2 or 3 times when she came back this year and just toying with him. I know he's sitting there. He's not even moving. I know it. And I hear guys talk about these trip notes and they don't bring up any of that. You know, I don't know if they don't look or.
That's the differential there is that they can appreciate and they can see where a horse was ridden into trouble and lost ground or lost length, you know, based on the way in which things unfolded. But that's a nuance that is very tough to.
The barrel racing background, maybe why I go there, because you're always learning as a kid. You know, I was told, you know, watch this person. Well, I'm watching what they do with their hands and their feet. That's what I wanted to know. So that kind of first thing I did when I went to watching replays, I went to, a big factor for me, like, use Formulator. When you click a replay on Formulator, it's 480p or whatever it is. You know, it's non-high def. So then I have to go somewhere else because I can't see it. I can't see their hands, you know. So I'm looking, I've got to have some HD somewhere where I can see what I'm looking at.
Well, and for those that are listening that, you know, that have for years complained about how slow the sport was to make the move to high definition, here's a perfect example. Somebody that's going to bet money and needs HD
well,
to be able to.
It affects my playing at Churchill and Fairgrounds. I play Fairgrounds some because it's wintertime, but I avoid Churchill and Fairgrounds for two reasons. One is there's no HD. The replays are, they're, well, it's 2020. It's pathetic. I know. That's the bottom line.
That's fair.
And then, of course, you can't use their races in contest play, so that time-wise, I'm always, you know, I'm looking there first. So.
Well, and so the you know, the tracks that have, you know, made the commitment, they're, you're a beneficiary of a player like Chris. Chris Couples with us from Hazel, Kentucky. It's his first NHC. He's double qualified. How are you going to split up the tickets? Have you thought about the approach about, you know, how you're going to, you know, where you're going to keep them on a parallel track for a period? Talk about the strategy on that front.
It'll mainly depend on what I find, but the second entry does obviously let you throw some bombs in there if you find something, take a little some risk here and there. But mainly it'll just depend on where my opinions get strong and where they don't. And if I can find some strong opinions, I'll double them up and run them parallel. But it'll mainly just depend on what I find.
One other thing that popped in my head, when it comes to the trip notes and you know, horses that you're tracking, how do barn changes and jock changes affect your decision making and latching onto a horse that, you know, that may have essentially had their chances compromised, you know, by a rider that doesn't fit either style wise or a rider that's not, you know, taking full advantage of the horse that and what the horse can do?
Barn changes, obviously, you look at. But jockey changes, to me, is the bigger. When I'm figuring out the pace of the race, jockey changes is probably the second thing I do in my process. If these agents and riders don't know more than I do about these horses, then we've got a big problem. So I look where they're going, you know, and where they're moving. That's a big, big factor.
Who among the riding community, who in your mind moves a horse up and you know, of course, when it comes to turf, you know, there's certain style points and certain, you know, certain approaches that,
right,
you know, that certain guys just seem to, you know, they're and frankly, there's some guys that aren't necessarily thought of as, you know, the most elite riders in the game, but are very good in certain circumstances.
A lot of it depends on what race it is, obviously, you know, sprinting, rounding, whatever. Pratt, yeah, I watch where Pratt goes. If he changes horses, there's a reason. If the one he got off of looks a ton better on paper, it don't matter. Well, those guys know what they're doing, obviously. I look, if I see some, watching replays and something's a little rank, whatnot, they, you know, Mike Smith gets on it. He's obviously a horseman. He's a Hall of Fame jockey, but he's done it all his life. He's good with calming them type down. I've seen that over and over. Underrated, I always look, see where James Graham, if I'm playing Fairgrounds or something.
Nice.
He does nice job on moving ones up that have specific products similar to, like, Mike, you know, something that's rank or whatnot. Depending on the style, you know, if they put Lannery on something, and he draws inside, and it's kind of the closer, it's something that's going to set off, and there's some pace, you're going to move that one up. I know it's just everything is just based on the situation, I guess. I don't look for no obvious, you know, a certain pattern.
Well, and, you know, this past weekend, I had the Beat the Host assignment, and I guess it was that race. I think it was the race that was coming off the turf. It was the race that we knew was going to end up being off the turf.
The last race
at Gulfstream. and Paco Lopez was getting was going to be on the Kelly Breen,
yeah,
on the outside. State of War, I think was the horse's name, and I was drawn to him.
I remember looking at the horse
because I figured, you know what, and ended up that it wasn't a wet. I mean, it wasn't a sloppy wet day at all, but. I thought, you know what, Paco's going to put this horse, you know, right
he's
on the
go.
Lead, and there's a real, and I was kind of, you know, back of my mind, I was thinking, well, if it rains, it's going to be wet and slick, you know, he can get out, you know,
right.
And he did get out, and then got overwhelmed by the obvious, favorite, ended up winning, but you know, that's the kind of scenario.
Yeah. You know what was going to happen.
Exactly, and you're conceiving in your mind, you know, how do I see this, you know, and this particular guy getting on board, how is that going to, you know, change
right.
the flow, and you know, so that, I mean, personally, that's why I picked State of War on Saturday.
Yeah, you knew he's going to be on the front end.
Yeah,
he's not, you know, there's not going to be a traffic trouble. If it's sloppy, yeah, he's not going to take it in the face.
Exactly. And off he's going to go. And then he did, you know, I wasn't unhappy with the, you know, the way it turned out. But those are the decisions. I'll give you the guy as well from off the pace on the grass. It's Joe Bravo.
Oh, yeah. He does a great
Joe Bravo.
Job.
Joe,
he's patient.
Just time and again, and if I see that he's landed on something that is going to be rallying and there's pace, I'm quite willing to go all in.
Right.
You heard, I don't know if you heard yesterday's show, but we talked about Rosario and
yeah,
the ride that he gave High Velocity on Saturday. And Baffert said specifically, and it's funny because I kind of was walking behind them out of the paddock out to the walking ring at Santa Anita. And Baffert was saying to him, listen, out of the break, get him, he's going to get him in the race, but. You know, don't fight him, and he was as still as can be, and Baffert was very insightful yesterday. I thought about High Velocity.
Oh, yeah, I love
listening. What's going to happen?
I could listen to him talk. You could just give him a microphone, just let him talk for 3 hours. I'd listen every day.
Well, and you know, he can. It's funny because he can be. He can sometimes he. I think people think he could be tough to interview. You just let him
do his thing.
Yeah,
I love listening
to
his stories. You know, yeah, the older stories,
and just it'll just kind of weave around and unfold, and invariably there's something to be
right,
learned. We've had two long conversations of late with him. The one in Arizona, the
yeah,
University of Arizona, which was really
that.
Fun. And I yesterday I really didn't need to talk too much about the 3,000 wins because we talked about, you know, the background and career. Should really put maybe I'll have Casey put those two together. That would be a
well, at first yesterday I thought it was a replay. I thought that's what I was listening to, and then because I kind of jumped in there at the last minute, so I thought it was a replay from Yard Arizona.
Oh, because you know, how do you not after the 3,000th win, and we hadn't had a chance to talk about Mucho Gusto and the Pegasus win because we knew that I knew I was coming out to California, so I thought we would talk Thursday specifically, actually, and then when I got there, the line wasn't working at Clocker's Corner, so I had to go up to the press box, and that crazy scene on Monday with the, you know, with no training, so all the horsemen
right,
were battened down in the barns with their horses. I mean, they could barely even really walk. I mean, the stuff was rattling around, and you know, horses aren't great in that setting. Yeah, so no,
yeah, I love listening to his quarter horse stories too.
Well, those are fun. That story he told about going to Los Al and being, you know, trying to take the next step.
Right. Yeah, that was very entertaining listening to all that. He's had a heck of a career.
And far from over.
Oh yeah,
that's the thing that's amazing about horsemen in general, is that, you know, there it's not like other pro sports. I mean,
one of the things that's drawn me in closer to it and got me more involved. And I've talked to a couple people earlier this week about it. It seems like every decade, people are just a little more rude, and they're, I don't know, just, you know, in general. But in horse racing, and there's always a bad apple, but 99% of everybody is polite. The first time I ever went to Keeneland, I got up at 4 o'clock in the morning, got a cab, went to the barns, left wife and kids at the hotel. You know, and I went anywhere I wanted to, walk in people's barn, people talk to you. Until they don't even know who you are, but everyone's nice. Until it's just a different atmosphere, like you said, than any other sport.
And to some degree, I don't know if we take full advantage as much as we should on the marketing side of the personalities and the proximity. I mean, the ability of horse players and fans to interact with the biggest stars.
Oh yeah,
I know you can. The sport is amazing.
Walk into about anybody's barn in the morning, and if they're not in the middle of something, they're going to talk to you. They're going to say, "Hey, you want to look at this or see that horse?"
Yeah. Well, the barn. You know, we have the barn tours. There. You know, every racetrack has got barn tours,
yep.
And you know they'll be able to interact with horses, and we need to do that as much as possible. You know, the same thing. You know, with the riders, one of the great things at Saratoga is, of course, the jocks, you know, walking, you know, out from the winner's circle and from weighing out and, you know, going back to the jocks room and signing autographs with kids, giving kids goggles. And you know, you cannot underestimate the value of that interaction. It's spectacular. It's what makes, you know, it's one of the things that I think we need to, you know, really, really rely on, and players like you that are dedicated and are putting in, you know, real time and effort. And, you know, here's, how old are you?
I'm 39.
39.
I'll be 40 in April.
So you really did came to the game at that exact juncture in your 30s.
Early 30s when I kind of started dabbling in.
That's the MO. I mean, you were aware of it, in your teens and 20s, started to make some money and have some leisure time and, you know, dabbled in sports betting.
Right.
And there's going to be plenty of people, you know, with this proliferation of sports betting that the coffee is piling up.
Well, that's the odd thing for me now. Now with the legalized sports betting, everybody's kind of getting into that and going away, and I'm going the opposite way. But I'm home. That's kind of when they zig, you zag.
I have said that I think there's nothing wrong with, you know, people are so concerned. Oh, it's going to draw people away from. I disagree. People are going to be eager to bet. They're going to have access to betting. They're going to be introduced to it. They're going to find out how hard it is. Yeah. It's our job to capture those people that are learning to bet, to say you got a much better chance if you play our game, and we've, you know, this is the opportunity for us to fix a lot of problems, including, you know, the bet cost structure, takeout issues. There's a lot of things we can do right now when there's going to be more people gambling than ever before.
Yep. And the key of what you said is right now.
Yeah.
If the industry just sets on their hands, they're going to miss the window.
Well, we've missed plenty. We've been locked in the basement on that front for a long time. Chris, this was tremendous fun. I can't thank you enough.
I appreciate it. It was an honor.
Well, and best of luck.
Thank you.
You're not going to play in the first chance, last chance.
No.
Use that time to work.
Oh, yeah. I'll be watching replays. I've watched replays for 3 days straight now.
Well, there's going to be. I think we'll have the release. I think we'll have the release today or tomorrow.
I don't remember. I was going to look at that this morning,
Keith,
to see when the mandatories were.
I think they released the mandatories for Thursday. They'll release the mandatory for Friday today.
Good. That'll help.
Because I know they were looking at them yesterday. So you'll have the Friday mandatories.
Keith, if you're listening, no 5,000 claimers.
Chris couples everybody from Hazel. Say hello to the wife and family with so when they listen later.
Yep. Wife Amanda and kids, Taylor and Emma, they're back at home in Hazel going to school.
Where they belong. Chris Couples, everybody. Watch for him on the leaderboard with either of his two entries. We're going to take a break. We'll catch up with Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. Next, we're coming to you live from Bally's from the Event Center here in Las Vegas, day one.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest, we know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet, and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. B-Y-K to get that $125 bonus. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The North American fall crop continues to decline, but not here in Pennsylvania. In 2019, our number of mares bred increased for the third year in a row, this time by 12.5%. Why? Our stallion roster continues to grow. We have the best incentives and bonuses. Plus, there's the stability of our racehorse development fund. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Oh, the neons are a-gleaming and the gamblers are a-dreaming. Oh, it's nightlife, yeah, nightlife. The chips go spilling and it's time to make a killing. Oh, it's nightlife, yeah, nightlife. Oh, the pockets are a-burning and the money flies. The dice go a-turning and you hit snake. You can't be a quitter when you're caught up in the glitter of the nightlife.
There we go.
Nightlife.
Our first and Vegas cut.
Naked women who will take you for a friend. Yes, it's nightlife. Oh, nightlife.
So great.
Their lips taste like honey, but they're
off and running.
Yes,
and the Event Center planning and execution is going to be very different. I think guys and gals that are headed here are going to be really, really pleased with the layout. There's going to be some areas to kind of sit and lounge. Sponsors and the various entities, the racetrack sponsors of NHC are going to have like these little lounge areas. This should be tremendous. I'm anxious for more players. I've seen a couple others trickle in, but Chris was down here at 5:30, and I thought, you know what? There's our first conversation, and he's both excited and nervous, and that, you know, that's part of the whole process here is harnessing your energy and your focus and keeping the nerves in check, and then also one thing that in fact I didn't really bring it up, but we'll have chances to talk about it, the time change And it's one reason that, you know, some players, as they've had more experience at NHC, they've come earlier to adjust to the time change. So to some degree, you know, much like when you hear about the NFL teams, you know, coming west and playing or vice versa, the West Coast teams coming to the East and essentially playing, if they play at 1 o'clock, it's like playing a game at 10 a.m. for them. Well, that part of it, you've heard me talk about this before. You know, if you're from the East Coast, you're going to be waking up at, you know, 2:30 in the morning. You're going to, you know, get tired at, you know, 7:30, 8, 9 o'clock, and you just can't automatically adjust. So a lot of people stay right on East Coast time if they're East Coasters. Others, you know, I can tell you, I've never, when I was traveling the West Coast for years on business, it was a nightmare. I would be just bleary-eyed, and I've gotten better about it as I've gotten older, or you know, done it. I certainly come west as much or more than I did, you know, years ago.